Hi, this is Shannon Adkins, and today I'm excited to be talking with Derek Champagne about culture, empowerment, and finding our purpose in our work.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. Our guest today is Shannon Adkins. She's a thought leader and CEO of Future State. It's a woman-owned, employee-owned consulting company with a triple bottom line where people get to be themselves. They treat their clients as the smartest person in the room. That's nice. Make them feel cared for and collaborated with at every step of the way. And clients include Fortune 100, nonprofits, and startups alike. And they're known for their people-first approach to all that they do and for being purpose-led. Shannon, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you and your listeners.
I love the people focus and them getting to be themselves and treating them as the smartest person in the room. I love that whole approach, that whole feel. we'll get into that more in a few minutes, but I want our listeners to get to know you. And we usually like to start just by hearing about just a little bit about your background. You can go as far back as you want. You can start as a kid. You can tell us a little bit about who you are. Let us get to know Shannon Adkins and who you are as a person.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Well, I'm a mom. That's probably today's back to school for the littlest one. So that's first and foremost. Both of my kids are I have one middle schooler and one elementary school age, so 13 and 10. And we had, if you've got the opportunity to be a parent or be around kids these days, screens are a big part of life and video games. And so we did a screen-free last 2 weeks of summer, and it's just been really awesome seeing my kids remember how to do art and pick back up the Harry Potter series and play card games and, fight and squabble with one another and find their way in the 21st century without an electronic device in their hand. So that's really present for me at the moment.
I can relate. Mine are 7 and 9, and we are already limiting screen time. So it's already in their life. So.
Yeah, it happens fast. It goes from just something we do every once in a while, and then it does end up being this lovely, easy way to keep them entertained when you're in the middle of work. So I think for all of us, it was a good reminder of like, life is better when we're present with each other. Let's do that more often and make that a part of our daily routine. So on top of that, I'm the CEO of a company, as you mentioned, Future State, that I started at in my early 20s. So I came out of college from UC Santa Barbara as an English major. Most of my parents, friends, and family said, wow, good luck with that. Are you going to be a teacher, or what are you going to do with that job or with that degree? And I didn't really have a plan other than briefly considering becoming a women's rights lawyer, activist lawyer, working on issues of employment, equity, and fairness. And instead of that, I came back to the United States after a little bit of time in Europe and backpacking around and finding myself, and got this wonderful job working for a woman-owned company in the Bay Area here. It was 1996, so the dot-com boom was just getting off the ground. And she said, there's something called the internet. I guess we should be doing something with it. I know nothing about it. Why don't you go figure that out? And gave me a chance to build a web practice here early in my career. And it was extraordinary, and she taught me so much. And then, sort of sent me out into the world and said, go fly, do your thing. And I did that, worked at Wells Fargo for 4 years running online bill pay, and worked at Intuit for 4 years running our third party software developer network, and then a couple of venture backed startups, and found myself as a new mom really looking for meaning, purpose, and belonging at work. And I came back to this company in 2010. Took a $100,000 pay cut and began the work of helping the organization transform and turn around. The company had been sold to the employees at that point in time, and was kind of trying to figure out what the next 30 years would look like. And kind of dug in. We were successful in doubling the revenue in those first 14, 15 months after I started, and put us on a new path with a new name and a new, you know, leadership team and new products and new offerings and new services and ultimately a new location. And then in 2015, I had the opportunity to step into the leadership of the organization, become the CEO, and took that chance. So, you know, just for me, I had this awesome career. I had, you know, these beautiful babies, and it was about really understanding that what mattered most to me was making sure that I was able to contribute my full and authentic self, be appreciated for who I was. And I remembered that work environment that I'd been in as a young person was really the first and last place where I had really felt that able to be free. So came back and committed to make sure that we stay that, you know, for another 35 years at least.
Mm, that's great. Great story. Thanks for sharing that. You did all these things. You took a pay cut to come back there. Did you know at the time coming in that you were going to take this particular leadership role?
I didn't. Actually, at the time, my family and I, we were living on our sailboat. And
awesome.
We had decided that we were going to take off. I told the CEO I would give the company about 5 years. And then we would be taking off on a multi-year journey to Costa Rica and beyond to do volunteer work and teach the kids about the world and that it's a big giant place and that not having an Xbox is actually not the definition of not fair and other things like that. Both of my kids were born into foster care. So, we really thought it would be important for them to understand that while they had hardship in their early life, so too does most of the world. And we live in a very, very strange place in the San Francisco Bay Area. Of course, there's hardship here as well. But in our community and in our ecosystem, you know, folks have a lot of resources available to them. So that was our plan. And we actually did our shakedown cruise. We went out for about a month on our shakedown cruise. And when I came back from that cruise, it was really great. The homeschooling was really hard, but the cruising part was really great. And I thought, well, why does anybody work? Like, what? This is silly. Nobody should work. This is, you know, everybody should just get a boat and sail around. But then after a few weeks of reentry, I looked at our mission and our vision and what we'd committed to as a leadership team. And I had a moment of pause and a moment of reflection and saying, we're really not being brave in pursuit of our vision, in pursuit of our mission. We're playing it safe. And I brought those concerns back to the CEO, and he sort of extraordinarily and graciously said, yeah, I think you're right. You know, it might be time for a new CEO. And that was not where I had been going. That wasn't my intention. Through a number of conversations, really arrived at to take the company to the next level, was going to take a different vision than where we, you know, where we'd been and where we were on the path to go. And so he, you know, very graciously passed the baton, and we began the process of becoming a B Corp and really talking about, you know, does the world need another management consulting business, right? Is the world dying for another management consulting? Right. Not really, right? Not really. There's enough, you know, we don't need to exist. It's not in and of itself. Consulting is not rocket science. It's not saving lives. So what would make it important and worthy of our time, effort, investment, and energy, and the time, effort, investment, and energy of our team members? Like, what does the world need more of? And we arrived at that the world needs more, well, it needs more work environments where people are free to be themselves, fully expressed, warts and all. People need to be able to work in an environment where their life is as important as their work and have that be visibly modeled by their leaders and by their peers. And our clients, if we worked with clients that were also committed to that vision and also saw that business needs to be about more than just the bottom line, and that business should serve all stakeholders. And that includes the community and the planet and its employees. as well as its shareholders, that would be a pretty important movement to be a part of and a pretty important set of projects to be working on and collaborations to be engaging with. So we really kind of pivoted a bit, not drastically or radically, because we don't have a big VC behind us, but right. Started to, you know, really put some effort and energy into making sure that we were investing in our team members, investing in our community, and targeting clients that felt the same way as we did. And we're on that journey as well to reinvent their success criteria and reinvent their business model.
Thanks for sharing this. You know, our company, after a decade in business, made a pivot in January of this year. So we've gone through something similar, a little bit different, but I'm learning from you right now as we're kind of just coming out of this shift where we've done some repositioning and asked some tough questions. What does the world need more of? And I'm curious, because you already, you know, you came back to this place because you said it was the first and last time that you felt like there was this type of culture or this type of acceptance. So you had a great foundation to work from, but what I'm curious, what uphill challenges you had, and how do you go? I'm a CEO right now. I'm going, how do I make some of these changes? How do I make them meaningful? Because it sounds good, and you could turn the ship somewhat, because that's what I want my next 10 years to be. But I mean, really, honestly, I'm asking, how do you hold the course, and how do you get meaningful change for this respectfully lofty goal, which you're attaining it? But I'd love your insight on that.
Well, I think, you know, in a transformation, some of it is realizing that it will take longer than you thought. So I think what we're pivoting again right now, this pivot is, the revenue growth is not going to come as fast as we need it to come, but we still need to continue to invest in developing our thought leadership, developing our IP, ensuring that we're being really rigorous about which clients we take on. Developing our team members. And we have to have faith that even if that runway is a little longer, over time, it will pay off. So we just went through an effort just last month of eliminating some of our operating budget, which, you know, unfortunately means some layoffs, a couple of layoffs. For us, we took those layoffs out of the executive team and said, let's invest in our frontline and our more junior resources. Let's expect revenue to stay flat for the next 24 months. And let's carve out enough of our operating budget so that we can truly invest in those strategic changes that we need to make. And let's be willing to have faith in our strategy, have faith in what makes us different, have faith in our team members, and pull together through that. So I think that's part of it. I'm an impatient person, and I'm also an optimist. So I was like, well, look, we declared it. We said we're better than all those other guys. So, you know, it's going to happen. And it is going to happen. It's just not necessarily on that time frame that I initially envisioned.
Your timing on this, again, is perfect. And I personally ask questions sometimes, because it's the reason we started this podcast a few years ago, is so that we could learn and grow. I mean, personally, and for our listeners, we've luckily found that they get benefit sometimes from my questions too. But this is so timely, and I appreciate it. And the patience has been probably my biggest struggle after this pivot, because I want to see the changes now. We have a real clear vision, but I want it now. And it is tough to make those changes. How, with your experience, and you've got such great experience, how do you have that patience? Yes, you have faith in the vision of where you're going, but how do you have faith and stay the course when you're saying, well, we're going to be flat for 24 months until we get to the other side of this? That's admirable, and a skill set that's really tough for me.
Well, I think there's two things. One is, I know I'm not willing to run the other business. Right. And the people who've come to my organization didn't sign up to run that other business, right? Didn't come to this company for the chase the revenue at all costs. Any project's a good project, you know, and they didn't come here for that. They came here for the promise of something else. So it's almost like it's not an option, right? I have to keep at it until it's successful, because that's what we committed to building. It would be easier to pull the blueprint up from a management consulting company that was founded in the 90s and 2000, you know, or 80s and 90s era, which has consultants travel, 100% utilization, selling all the time. No, you don't get to have a life. No, you don't get to have clarity of purpose. You work for who we tell you to work for, and you do what they ask you to do, even if it rubs you wrong morally. Like, that business model exists I happen to think it's on the way out. And I do think that it's not going to be a thriving business model for long. But either way, I don't want to work there. And the people that came here don't want to work there. So we have to build this company, and we have to build it inside of the vision that we've set. Otherwise, there's just really not much point. We should all just go work for one of those companies.
Well said.
We could probably make more money working for those companies, right? So there's something beyond the making money part that we believe in. And my COO and I, Kathy, it's not a logical decision at a certain point. It is an irrational decision to make, because yes, we could make more money the other way. And it is more expensive to accommodate working parents. It is more, on some level, right? On initial glance, it's more expensive to allow someone to say, well, I'm not going to be comfortable working on that project for Planned Parenthood because it's against my beliefs. I would like to recuse myself from that project and for that to be okay inside of our, inside of our culture, West Coast culture too, right? I mean, to really be able to say, like, we want there to be space for everyone to contribute. And we do want somebody to say, I have this passion project, the nonprofit that is trying to end homelessness. They need some help facilitating this workshop. No, it's not a lot of money, but man, it will give me such great juice and I really want to work on it. Can we support this project, or can we take this nonprofit into our physical space and let them use it for our event venues? And, all of those things that we say yes to, that maybe a business that was only looking at, is that going to lead to revenue or is that going to improve my bottom line, would say no to.
Right.
We have to believe that those are the things that actually are the success criteria for a 21st century business. And certainly if you want to recruit and retain the best talent, they are. We're in this weird spot in the San Francisco Bay Area, right? With 3% unemployment or less.
And,
and so I don't just want employees. I want the best employees. And I want people who are willing to say, I'm only going to work for an organization that's aligned to my values and for whom I feel like I can do my best work. And I'm going to work harder in that environment. People who are self-aware know that about themselves. I want those folks on my team. Mm-hmm. And, it's working in a way, it works in really tangible ways. The data's there, right? Our clients are ridiculously satisfied with our services. We have something like a 89.6% net promoter score, which is higher than USAA and higher than Southwest, right? Wow. So really, really happy clients, really engaged team members and happy team members. We do have people who say, well, I really want to work for Future State, so I'm willing to wait until you're ready for me. Right. Or I'm willing to take slightly less pay or this role to get in the door. Knowing that it's a crowded market and we do have to compete against brand names that everybody recognizes and get the word out with our limited budget, you just really keep believing that doing business in a different way is what the world wants and is what people want.
I love how you're doing the business. I love that it's a purpose-led company. Tell me more. We've got a few minutes left. I want to talk about a few more questions, but tell me more about the culture. I mean, it's very intentional what you've done, maintaining a magical company culture as you grow, the power of love at work. I know that's something you talk about. Yeah. Take us inside to the culture, some of the key lessons of how you're doing it, because it's obviously been a buzzword for a long time. For me, this leadership series, we started it because I realized, I woke up one day and realized two things. One is I realized I was a leader after having 8 companies. I just wanted to be an entrepreneur. I went, and the second thing was I said, I'm an unintentional leader. And so it's been for me a quest to say, okay, well, how do I make this intentional? A lot of people don't naturally come in and go, ooh, we just built this great culture, and you are fortunate that you've got these ingredients. So take us inside a little bit more even and tell us what makes that culture, what the experience is like, and just kind of give us an inside look a little bit more.
Yeah. So I think one thing that I can't underestimate is that everybody is an owner. Mm. And so we're 100% employee owned.
Okay.
So when I say to my team members, my job is to make you successful. It's not lip service, right? Literally, wow, is my job, right? My job is to maximize shareholder return, and shareholders are my employees. Mm. So I get that easy alignment right away, right? Everybody knows what I'm driving for. Mm. And because we are an employee, transparency and collaboration is sort of the expectation. I expect my team members to ask me about the P&L, and I expect them to ask me about why we're investing on this instead of that. And I expect of them that they're thinking critically about how can I maximize the opportunity for future state to be successful inside of achieving our mission and our vision. And I think the other piece that's a little different here is I don't know the history background, you know, educational backgrounds, economic backgrounds of any of my team members. I don't know what college they went to. I don't know if they went to college. We don't interview for or hire for pedigree. We hire for mindset, and we hire people who are heart-led, being authentic, on a journey of self-awareness. We test for those attributes first, and then we start to talk about, okay, great. So what are you really good at? What do you want to learn? How do you want to grow? Where are you trying to evolve into? What can you do in your sleep? What do you not want to be doing because you can do it in your sleep? You know? And then we really actually try to match make the talents and aspirations and goals of our team members to the projects that we have. We're wondering how scalable that's going to be over time. Right. But at least for the moment, it really is a genuine point of view and belief that people do their best work when it's aligned to their passions and their goals for themselves, and that we have some flexibility to help people make that happen. So if what you really want to do is org design, but we're currently doing communications work, well, let's work together to figure out how we can maybe pitch an org design project to that client that you're doing communications work with and get you the support and coaching that you need in order to work more in that domain. And I think we just generally, it's not a pretend caring about each other. We're small enough still too, or we're about 70 people. So we can know each other pretty well and understand what makes each other tick really well.
That's great.
We still have some work to do on inclusion. You know, we are 100% employee owned. We're 87% woman owned, which means that actually over the vast history of this company, even before I took over, we were almost all women. So we have sort of the flip side of the inclusion challenge. We need to make sure that we create a welcoming environment for men, and that we create opportunities for men to contribute themselves fully here. So very strange when people hear me say that, but we have a very, very feminine culture. And we are, you know, making strides with being a less white organization, but we still have work to go there too. So I think continuing to expand our ecosystem and expand our footprint to help bring more diversity and more diverse voices and perspectives into our organization is going to be really critical to success. Mm. We're also kind of an old organization. We're getting better, but we have had less success in bringing millennials into the organization and having them, you know, really thrive in our environment, because we have a lot of seasoned people, a lot of people who've been there, done that, and are looking for something different in their life, find their way to future state. So we have an aging workforce. Probably 45 is the average age of our team members. So
that's really interesting, because the way the environment that you've described seems like a great fit for a millennial mindset.
Yeah.
The purpose and it's amazing. So yeah, I think that you are set for great recruiting if you figure out a few of those challenges that you need to overcome. But
yeah,
so just a final question for you, and then I want to get another final thought from you and give a plug for you as well. But tell me about, so you've given us this, we understand your mindset, your pivot, asking what the world needs more of, have a purpose-led company, all the employees are owners, and I get that. I love that. So, but talk to me about the other element, which is the community. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the importance of investing in the community, of being a part of the community, and how that fits into your overall ecosystem.
Yeah, so we are in downtown Oakland. Oakland, California is a city in a massive amount of transition. So gentrification is hitting hard here. We have a lot of folks of color that are being pushed out of the city. Housing is insane. I guess people who are more familiar with East Coast cities, you know, it's the Brooklyn of the New York City 10 years ago, right? And we are seeing that here in Oakland. So housing prices have shot up, a lot of displacement, a lot of homelessness, a lot of angst and anxiety about all of the things that keep that make Oakland so extraordinary: the diversity, the art, the culture, the food scene, the redwood forests, you know, all the things that make Oakland extraordinary are at risk. And nobody really wants to see Oakland become San Francisco East. They want it to stay Oakland. Hmm. So we do work with our community partners on issues of homelessness, housing, issues of equity and inclusion, issues of race. We actually house a nonprofit rent-free in our physical space that's working on all of those issues and social justice issues. And we've been doing that for 2 years now. We make our space available to social ventures and to nonprofits for their personal events. We fundraise and do community activities ourselves. So we do an annual fundraiser to raise money for the Alzheimer's Association. We do lakeside cleanups. We've worked as volunteer teams at Project Homeless Connect and Habitat for Humanity. And then we encourage our team members, you know, we give them certainly volunteer hours paid, but on top of that, we really encourage them to look at what boards can you join? How can you become more active in your community? We have a team member who successfully ran for office while employed by Future State and holds that office. We have team members that are on the board of their local, you know, school board or on their local nonprofit of their choosing. And so we really encourage people to find opportunities for leadership and contribution inside of their work time, you know, within reason, right. and to take care of those community obligations and to connect us to those community obligations. I personally think that the solving of a number of our challenges inside of communities that are facing the challenges that Oakland's facing, which is a lot of communities, is a collaboration between the business ecosystem, the nonprofit ecosystem, and the government sector. So figuring out how to be effective conveners and connectors, as well as potentially offering some of our services to those less resourced entities, like just like we do for Wells Fargo and for Genentech and for Roche, let's provide that service and structure to the city of Oakland as they grapple with the issues that are challenging them. And so I think for us, it's that really looking at what does that private-public partnership look like? How do we work on these initiatives and bring our skills to bear? And how do we show up in the community as a partner, not as, you know, hey, we're here, the rent's a little less, we just really want access to the talent, we don't really care about our town. You know, it was really intentional and deliberate that we moved our offices to Oakland. That was a designed choice for us. So
tell me about, as a leader in an ever-changing environment with all the challenges you have, what are some things that you do to continue to educate yourself, to get the right kind of consulting and mentorship that you need? What are some resources for you that keep you where you need to be to continue growing as a leader?
Well, there's two things I've really started doing. Well, one thing is I think I'm kind of actually a master at life-work balance. Maybe I should add that to one of my podcast things. Nice. But my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at 49. I'm 46 this year. So for my entire career, I've been, well, I guess from the moment that I learned that my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I've been like, life is life. It's not something you do after your career, right? It's not what you get to when you're 50. Right. And I need to make sure that I'm enjoying my children, enjoying my community, enjoying hiking and biking and, you know, all the things that are available to me here every week, because there's no guarantees. So I'm really rigorous about that. And I think it's actually kind of awesome because I role model it for the team. So the team sees me go to the gym. The team sees me go for a walk. This team sees me bug out at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday to go take a horseback ride. Mm. But what I do when I'm doing those things is I listen to a lot of books on tape. I listen to a lot of podcasts. So when I'm out of the office in kind of recharge mode, I'm also getting recharged emotionally and intellectually, not just sort of physically and spiritually. And that's been a really great way to kind of fit it all in. Mm-hmm. And know that downtime is important. Tasks are going to overtake my day if I'm sitting in the office every single day. So getting, you know, forcing myself to leave and get on the horse and put in a Brené Brown talk on vulnerability and, you know, listen to Lean Startup and get my juices flowing and thinking about, oh yeah, that would work for my next conversation that I have to have at work is good.
That's great advice. Any final thoughts you want to share with our audience today?
I think the purpose and empowerment are really predicated on an understanding of yourself. And I think that we sometimes consider the softer side of business, you know, the whether you're doing it through Myers-Briggs or any other kind of assessment tool. But I think sometimes we think that spending time on our own self-awareness as leaders, knowing our strengths, weaknesses, becoming comfortable and speaking about them with our team members, and then encouraging other people to do the same. And that the more space we give for people to be human and to know their own humanity, the better we are as leaders. I think there's a shift happening, but I think it's a really important shift. I don't think we can be successful and effective leaders or team members if we don't first have self-awareness.
Great. Shannon, thanks again for being with us. How can our listeners learn more about you? Where can they go? How would you like them to engage with you?
I'm a crazy LinkedIn addict. I think I spend like an hour or two a day on LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn, Shannon Adkins, A-D-K-I-N-S. And I have, if you just send me a note that says heard you on the podcast, absolutely happy to connect on LinkedIn. Future State's also on LinkedIn and Facebook. But the other place that you can find us is www.futurestate.com.
FutureState.com on LinkedIn. Shannon Adkins, thank you so much again for being a guest with us. I love your transparency and sharing what you've learned with your company. It's exciting to me to see this. It's timely for me personally, and I know it will be for many of our listeners. So that's the amazing thing about these things is how they work out with sharing your story and helping others. So I look forward to seeing the next great things that you do, and thank you again for taking your time today.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.
Derek Champagne here, host of the Business Leadership Series, and I'm inviting you to join me every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. right here on this station, where I interview world-class leaders who share their principles for success. Learn more at businessleadershipseries.com.
The Business Leadership Series is brought to you by The Artist Evolution, an aspirational agency creating memorable brands and marketing campaigns. Learn more at marketingstrategyhero.com.